Many years ago, I lived for a couple of years in a village in East Africa. And there, I focused in part on water purification projects. Other Peace Corps volunteers and my family and friends at home couldn't understand why it was so difficult for people to just treat their water. It's really annoying to have to boil your water or treat it every time you want to get a drink or cook or do laundry or do anything that involves water. It's a lot harder than people make it out to be. And it's also pretty hard to treat water if you don't know that it's making you sick, if for whatever reason you don't want to believe that. Every year in June, thousands of Unitarian Universalists from around the country and beyond gather for our denomination's General Assembly. You heard today that we're having a cook-off in a couple of weeks to raise money to send delegates. And religious professionals, lay leaders, youth, people from all over gather together to worship, to be in fellowship, and to learn more about how to do our work better in our churches and in the world. We also get together for the express purpose of conducting, through the democratic process, the business of the Unitarian Universalist Association. It's a lot like our annual meeting, or congregational meetings in general, here at First U. And you can imagine what a national or international congregational meeting is like. For those of you who worry about the meeting running into lunch, just know that this meeting takes 5 days. The agenda includes various business items, things like changes to the bylaws or reports from various committees. And it also includes, most years, a few statements of conscience that the group votes on. These actions of immediate witness are meant to be expressions of our solidarity with various social justice issues. Solidarity affirmed by this particular gathering in this particular city in this particular year. And in recent years, delegates have adopted statements about building solidarity with our Muslim neighbors, standing with indigenous people on climate justice issues, protecting and supporting transgender people, demanding closure of immigration detention centers. Annoyingly, Congress does not then immediately adopt these statements as the law of the land. Also annoyingly, the statements don't bind our members, our congregation, or our association to funding or programming. They are statements. Some delegates will bring them back to their home congregations. We do this at First U, and people will vote to affirm them. But in essence, they're words on a page. As such, the statements, the whole process, the time and energy that goes into it, sometimes are criticized for being merely symbolic. Maybe that's time that could be better spent doing something else. But as a community, we generally think that words are important. We like to listen to them. We especially like to speak them. We know that they're powerful. We know that there are harmful repercussions of derogatory and dismissive words from the playground, or the pulpit, or the president-elect's Twitter account. We also know that we find comfort and strength and inspiration in poetry and speeches and prayers. These statements are professions of our religious convictions. These public statements are meant to urge Unitarian Universalists to further action. In 2015, the Youth Caucus put forward a proposal for an action of immediate witness, working together with DRUM, the Diverse Revolutionary Unitarian Universalist Multicultural Ministries organization, basically the organization for UUs who are people of color, and the Allies for Racial Equity. Youth leaders put together a statement that was an affirmation of our solidarity with the movement for Black Lives. The delegates seemed delighted, completely charmed that high schoolers cared enough about an issue and felt empowered enough in our religious community to put forward a proposal. That being said, the debate did not go smoothly. Clearly, not everyone in that room in Portland, not everyone among those thousands of UUs, wanted or was willing to say the words Black Lives Matter. Others thought, okay, yes, Black Lives do matter, but this particular statement was far too radical. Were we really willing to say that the prison system was the new Jim Crow? Is abolition really the word that we wanted to use when we talk about a fundamentally broken prison system? Actions of immediate witness entered into the general debate, usually with two or three amendments. Unitarian Universalists like to wordsmith. But in this particular case, this came to general debate with 14 amendments. People simply didn't like the way it was written. And the debate went on for 2 hours. It was filled with emotion and descended into ever increasingly complicated procedural. It was a mess. I grew up in LA where we have the world famous tar pits. And to be quite honest, I don't know if these are world famous. I don't know if people know, I don't know if you know about them, but this is LA, so everything is famous. And I loved the tar pits. I went a lot as a child, and when you walk in, there are statues of woolly mammoths, a parent and a child, and they're stuck in the tar. They are determined, but they're stuck, and they will be slowly overtaken. And the look of terror on their faces is clear. That's what that room felt like as the conversation went on and on. That was what the room felt like when the ushers were hand recounting a vote about a vote about whether or not we should take a vote on the amendment to the statement. As the various amendments dragged on, in the eyes of the youth who wrote that statement, it seemed like the statement would be fundamentally changed and its power would be negated. The youth and the co-organizers ran back and forth from mic to mic, trying to figure out where they could best use their support and keep this alive. 90 minutes into the debate, as everyone got increasingly frustrated, I found myself standing next to a leader of our denomination. She's a young black woman who I greatly admire. And not for nothing, she was in a youth group advised by our very own Megan Henry. And she said to no one in particular, but I like to think she was talking to me because I have a hero crush on her. She said, take it to a vote. Take it to a vote because we're going to lose this, but we need to take it to a vote so we can say this is where we were in 2015. We need to know the numbers and we need to write this down so that we can point next year or whenever we happen to get ourselves right, this is where we were then. A half an hour later, by some miracle and a less than enthusiastic margin, it passed. And the passing was triumphant, but mostly it brought relief. It, for a lot of people, felt like the very least we could do. And it was a call to do more. Many members and congregations did, in 2016, try to figure out how to better support the movement for Black Lives. A lot of us are still trying to figure out what that meant. But it was mostly relief that day, not victory. A year later, we gathered again at General Assembly, this time in Columbus, Ohio. While most of us who get paid to do this sort of thing attend almost every year, most lay leaders, most congregational members only go once every few years at most. So most of the people at General Assembly in 2016 weren't there in 2015. However, the youth leaders who drafted that statement, they, for whatever reason, came back. They came back to serve on staff or to grow into their leadership as young adults, only they thought they'd take it easy this year. They said, no more business resolutions. We're going to focus on programming for high schoolers. We're going to do, you know, what's asked of us and what's expected, but it's too much. We can't do that again. It was too hard on us. So they did the easy thing of being staff members and working from morning to midnight. And when you're a staff member, you can't go to everything. You can't go to everything no matter who you are because lots of things happen at the same time. So these youth members, they weren't able to go to the Black Lives of UU workshop track, for example. What they could go to were the business meetings. Everyone could go to the business meetings. Everything else stops and nothing else is scheduled during these meetings. And so the stories that are told then are the stories that are heard by everyone. Everyone also attends a public witness event. But last year in Columbus, the public witness event, because of fear of extreme weather, was moved indoors. What was meant to be a rally for racial justice in front of the Ohio State House was moved inside the conference center. And while the words and the music were inspiring, it felt potentially more like a celebration than a call to action. The youth longed for the action of the previous year, when after the passage of the statement, hundreds of UUs and partners from the community walked out of the business meeting and onto the streets of Portland in protest. That was a witness. This was a concert, I heard a lot of the youth say. The doubts and concerns only grew when in the business meetings, they repeatedly mentioned last year's Black Lives Matter statement, but they didn't mention how slim the margin was. They didn't really mention how much controversy it stirred or how much pain and divisiveness there was in that room. Naomi Shihab Nye tells us that so much of any year is flammable. Meetings, or sermons for that matter, might seem interminable, but most of our time, the poet tells us, is a quick dance, a shuffle of losses and leaves. Most of the people in the room in Columbus had no knowledge of what had happened that previous year in Portland. Those that were there seemed to be telling a story that was different than the one that the youth remembered. The youth were celebrated for their work, but in the perceived absence of ongoing racial justice efforts that stretched Unitarian Universalists, the youth felt like their victory had been co-opted. After the heated exchanges of the previous year, the things that didn't happen, the things that the poet and many of us didn't do, still crackle after the blazing dies. Despite my mandate as a chaplain to the youth, I could not and would not pour water over the crackling of anger and hurt and discomfort about things that almost happened but didn't. Despite every intention to relax and stay out of the spotlight, the youth took to the power of words again. In a series of emergency meetings between youth leaders and allies, the youth drafted a responsive resolution to introduce at the week's final general session. It reads in part, "Whereas the action of immediate witness, support the Black Lives Matter movement, was passed by the General Assembly in 2015, whereas the Black Lives Matter AIW has been frequently referenced as satisfactory proof of our progress towards racial justice," that I think is sarcastic, "therefore, be it resolved that we hold ourselves accountable to less witness and more action. Be it finally resolved that the Board of Trustees shall issue a multi-year report on the board, staff, congregational, and denominational responses to Black Lives Matter, and particularly examine the year-to-year growth in these responses at General Assembly 2017, 2018, and 2019. I'm not often inspired by legal speak. Parliamentary procedure is not really my thing. But this resolution was powerful. It was a heck of a resolution. It was something that a lot of us don't bother to do. Of course, this is the time for making resolutions. And out of curiosity, I'd like to know how many of you have made a New Year's resolution. A handful, a fair number. I'm actually surprised by how many people have bothered, because it seems like it's really out of fashion these days. We've given up, it seems, on the idea of resolutions. It's not, generally speaking, that we are people without goals, ambition, or drive. Yeah, some of us are afraid to give voice to our dreams, afraid that we'll look foolish for what we desire for ourselves and the world. And others of us have real hopes, big hopes for the world, but maybe feel like calling it a resolution feels trivial. And this is probably the biggest reason, it's the reason I'm guessing many of you don't bother to make resolutions. We don't think they work. We've tried it in the past, and by February, it all seems like a quaint dream. But this responsive resolution, put forward by youth leaders, placed a specific and binding demand on our association. It came from a place of hurt and anger, and it dared to say that we cannot forget our history and our context. History, in this case, being only last year. We need to move forward and look to the future, yes, but we cannot forget where we are right now. The excerpt that I shared comes from a moment of pain, but it's also a point of honest reckoning with our past and our present so that we might more authentically and healthily approach the future. Some attendees were surprised. They were horrified by this responsive resolution. More support for the movement for Black Lives is a good thing, of course, they said. But they came up to me as a staff member of the Youth Caucus and said, Why throw a temper tantrum? We raised $90,000 today for the Black Lives of UU organization. The fact that the board has since then pledged $5.3 million is one such reason, but there are many others. These sorts of business resolutions always start with a list of statements that start with whereas, and they build it up to the be it resolved part. The formula is because of this and this and this, therefore this, we will do something differently. I don't necessarily think that we need to incorporate more legal governance speak into our personal lives, but for those of us who are against resolutions, we might take a lesson from this. New Year's resolutions frequently fail because we look to the future and forget the past. When we can more honestly assess where we're coming from, that resolution to exercise more comes with the recognition that you haven't exercised since high school when you were on the basketball team. So maybe it ought to... That's me, sorry. So maybe the resolution needs to be find a basketball league. Despite hearing again and again how proud and how good we Unitarian Universalists were, the youth knew that their religious community wasn't perfect by any means. Daily bathing is refreshing, but it turns out it's bad for your health. It helps to get to know the source of the stink. Our motivation and commitment to a new way of being is strengthened when we can cleanse ourselves of old burdens. We do not need to cling to what we leave behind. In the burning bowl, you've burned away something, though I think some are still perhaps up top. We've burned away things that we're ready to let go. We get to lay down the burdens of our shortcomings, but they fuel the fire for next year. It's not a fire for last year, but one for the upcoming year. Even the ugly, embarrassing parts of our history, when treated honestly, can help us grow. The real lesson from the youth, the lesson that they taught us last summer, was that the source of our growth is not found in our perfection, but in our imperfection. What we choose to do with it is our task for the next year. Please rise in body or in spirit and join us in singing our closing hymn, number 128, For All That Is Our Life.